I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the prosecutors. Today on the prosecutors, a man calls 911, frantic and in need of help. And then, in the middle of the call, he seemingly disappears without a trace. What happened to Brandon Lawson?
Okay. That's the first guy.
You need an ambulance?
Yeah, no, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of The Prosecutors. I'm Brett, and I'm joined, as always, with my superlative co-host, Alice.
Good one, Brett. You just used a superlative. You just used the superlative.
That's kind of a cop-out, but...
No. It was low-hanging fruit that you never went for, so good job.
Yeah, I had to get it eventually. There's only so many words, Alice, in the English language. I'm going to have to start going to, like... you know, other languages to describe him. Running out of descriptors. So
you know what? We should ask because we have so many listeners from different countries. Maybe they can write in, like, you know, different languages you can start learning. Because I'm sure everyone would love to hear you pronounce it in your accent.
Oh, I'm sure that would be amazing for everyone. including you, because you could then make fun of me for that, which I'm sure you would enjoy.
I never.
Yes. I know you better than the audience knows you, Alice.
That is true.
You can lie to them, but you can't lie to me.
It's good to be back.
It is so good to be back, Alice.
You know, we were saying that it's been, even though we haven't recorded for like a week, it feels like a lifetime. I'm just used to recording all the time with you.
This is basically the only thing that gets me through most days. So I don't know what to tell you. We're going to have to record more often or something. Well, it is good to be back, and it's good to be talking about this case, which is a famous one in the true crime community. It's the disappearance of Brandon Lawson. And for those of you who don't know this case, you just heard one of the most fascinating, mysterious, unexplainable 911 calls, really, in history. And it's a 911 call that has intrigued people and led to so much speculation about what happened to the man on the other end of that call, Brandon Lawson. And we're going to be talking about him today and seeing if we can get to the bottom of this mystery.
Yeah, Brett, you know, we basically, since we started the podcast, people have been asking us to do Brandon Lawson. And we've actually had it, you know, kind of worked up for a while, but we never got around to it because, I mean, we do love these disappearances, but this one boggled my mind for a long time. It kind of just made my brain hurt because of the way the timeline worked that we'll definitely get into. I don't know about you, but it was like a very frustrating case for me to think about.
Yeah, the thing about this case is it's one of those cases that a lot of people like to cover because it is mysterious and spooky. But when you really start digging into it, it just gets confusing. There's a lot of confusing aspects to it. And there's a lot more than sort of the mythology that's grown up around this case. And I do think when you look at it and you kind of look at it, not as like the spooky thing we want to all scare ourselves with the 911 call. And you look at the timeline and you look at some of the things that happened, I do think you can get a pretty good idea of what happened here. But it's definitely one that can leave you scratching your head. It's not quite Brian Schaefer. It's not quite Maura Murray when it comes to that, but the 911 call really is what makes this case different. And we're going to listen to that call a couple times. We're going to talk about what we think we hear there. I will say this, you can spend the rest of your life listening to that call. And there's people who've spent hour-long YouTube videos just going over the call over and over and over again and slowing it down and speeding it up and all kinds of things, trying to figure out exactly what Brandon Lawson is saying. I think under the, what I think is probably a mistaken impression, that if they could just figure it out, you would know what happened in this case. And I remember thinking that the first time I ever heard about it. I had not heard the call, and I listened to a podcast, and they were talking about this before they played the call. And I just thought, well, I'm going to hear it, and I'm gonna know what he's saying. I'm going to understand the information he is trying to communicate. And then you hear it, and it's just, it's on the verge of being intelligible, but it's not quite intelligible, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And we're I know people who know this case are saying, how could you be so sure that you can give a theory that's plausible here? But I think, you know, we're probably going to do something here that frustrates people who want more mystery, is we're going to be the cold water prosecutors, because I think if you really dig into the timeline and to kind of what's just below the surface, it becomes a more obvious story than at first blush. So with that, Brett, why don't you start us off? What story are we talking about?
Yeah, so this story starts back on August 8th, 2013, and it starts with something pretty ordinary, a fight between two people, Brandon Lawson and his, she's described differently by different people. Some people call her his girlfriend, other people call her his common-law wife. She's certainly the mother of his children. Her name is Ledessa, and she and Brandon have gotten into a fight. And Ledessa has good reason to be angry at Brandon. Brandon has had, you know, he's had some run-ins with the law, and he's had some trouble with drugs before. In the days leading up to August 8th, Brandon, he had taken some meth. It was something that he would do on occasion. He wasn't a regular meth user, but he was in this sort of weird circumstance, and this is an example of unintended consequences. He had just gotten a new job, and he had taken a drug test for that job, and because of that, he knew he was not going to be drug tested anytime soon, and that meant he could score some meth and get high. And the night before, he had not come home because he was high on meth, and he was probably high on meth at the time, and Ledessa was unhappy with him. Even though Brandon, he was a hardworking guy, he provided for his kids, she didn't like the fact, and I don't blame her, that he was doing this. And that fight had escalated to the point that Brandon decided he just needed to get out of there. This is something that happened every now and then in their relationship, where you get in a fight, best thing to do, let's just separate for the night for a couple hours, let everybody cool down, we'll come back together. This night, however, Brandon decided that he was going to drive to his father's house. Now, that may not seem like that big a deal, but his father's house was about 3.5 hours away, and that was if you took the short way. Brandon actually ended up taking the long way, and it was the middle of the night, and Brandon only had about a half tank of gas. And at some point on this trip, as he's driving to his father's house, he runs out of gas. He calls his brother, Kyle, and lets him know that his truck is stranded, he's out of gas, and he needs his brother to come by and give him some gas so he can continue on the road. At this point, nothing crazy is going on. At some point, a passing trucker on this road sees an abandoned vehicle. It's a truck, and the back end is sticking out in the road, and recognizing that that's a hazard, particularly this late at night, he calls the police. Brandon's brother and the police actually end up arriving at about the same time. Brandon's brother arrives first, and then the police show up. Now, the police are responding to that trucker's call. Now, the weird thing is that Brandon has actually called Kyle at this point. We're going to get into that conversation a little bit later. Brandon's calling a lot of people. Now, his reception is spotty, but Kyle and his girlfriend hear him say that he's bleeding. This is about all the information Kyle has, and he doesn't think it's that serious. He does not relay the information to the police, and one of the reasons is that Brandon had a warrant out for his arrest for an unpaid fine. So whatever Kyle thought was going on, he didn't think it was serious enough to tell the police for fear that Brandon would get in trouble if the police found him. Kyle hangs around. Eventually, the police officer leaves, and Kyle expects his brother will come out of the fields, come back to the truck, but he never does. Kyle eventually does get a gas can, gets it filled with gas, and he leaves it in the back of the truck so that when Brandon does return to his vehicle, he can refill the gas tank and head back home. But Brandon never returns. He had disappeared, and he has never been seen since. And that's when his family learned about the 911 call.
Yeah, when the cell phone bill came in, Brandon's cell phone logs show that he had placed a call to 911. Now, LaDessa requested a copy of that 911 call, and it actually took a while for her to get a copy of it. It took about 4 months before the police supplied her with it.
And let's just talk about that for a second, how long it took. One thing that we're going to come back to again and again, the relationship between Brandon's family and the police is not good. You know, I think some of that, I think there's some hostility from the police. If you read their interviews and reports, Brandon had been in trouble with the law. His brother's been in trouble with the law. His brother actually spent some time in jail recently. And I just think that that relationship has probably led to some delays that maybe shouldn't have happened in this case. And I kind of feel like this is one of them.
And Brett, remember, you know, kind of, I'm not going to say what led to this, but the complications in this case is that when the police showed up, both Kyle and Brandon were aware that if police were there, Brandon could be in trouble because he has an outstanding warrant. You know, that's got to be at the back of everyone's minds here. This is not some clean bill sort of citizen. He already had beef with the police, and maybe in the family's minds, the police had somewhat to blame in the sense that, even though it's a little bit irrational, but that because the police were there, Brandon didn't show up, didn't come out when Kyle arrived.
Right. And it's one of those unfortunate situations where if either the police sort of treated the family with the respect they deserve as somebody who has a missing relative, or if the family and Brandon and Kyle had not been trying to evade the police in the first place, you got to think either this tragedy would never have happened, or we'd have more information on exactly what did happen. And like I said, that's something that's going to come up again and again and again, and something to watch for as we continue to discuss this case.
You know, I have no idea why it took 4 months for the 911 tape to be provided, but having worked in governments before, sometimes requests for information is not at the top of anyone's list, and it just takes a while administratively for people to get around to it. It's not right. It's not, you know, efficient, but maybe there is a more mundane answer to it. But whatever the reason, it took quite a long time before the police released the 911 call. And now, if Brandon's family thought that listening to the 911 call would clear things up, they were sorely mistaken. As we've already mentioned, the 911 call is the center of this case. It is everything. Everyone who has ever heard about this case believes that if they hear the call, they can figure the case out. We've already listened to it, and we're going to listen to it again. But this call is anything but clarifying.
Yeah, and so what we'll do, you guys have heard this call already, but you didn't know what you were listening to at the time. So what we're going to do, we're going to play it a couple of times. Play it 3 times. There you go. 3 times. You'll figure the case out.
9:02:13:0:50:38
911 emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. It's like we're just pushing guys over.
right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here that I checked to the woods. 3:30.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. Hi, so you ran into him.
You ran into him. Okay.
That's the first guy.
You need an ambulance?
Yes. No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello? Hello?
9-2-1013-0:50-38
seconds.
911
emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. The tape, we're just pushing guys over. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I checked it to the woods. 3:30.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. Hi, so you ran into him.
You ran into him. Okay.
That's the first guy.
You need an ambulance?
Yes. No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello? Hello?
9-2-1013-0:50-38 seconds.
911
emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. The tape, we're just pushing guys over. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I checked it to the woods. 3:30.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. Hi, so you ran into him.
You ran into him. Okay.
That's the first guy.
You need an ambulance?
Yes. No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay. So there's the call. You've heard it several times. I guess there's no point in continuing this podcast because now that you've heard it, you can figure out exactly what happened and exactly why we've never heard from Brandon again. Now, look, a lot of podcasts, they do this case. And like I said, they spend a ton of time on this call. And I totally understand that. It's incredibly mysterious. It's one of the reasons I love this case and think this case is great. But you know, we're not going to spend the rest of this podcast on this call. I will tell you what I hear. Alice, you can tell me what you hear, what you think. This is what I hear him saying, or some semblance of what I think he's saying. I think he says, yes, I'm in the middle of a field, a state trooper. And I think that's what he's trying to say there when he says staper. I think he's trying to say state trooper. And we'll talk more about that in a second. A state trooper just pushed or pulled some guys over. It really sounds like pushed to me, not pulled. We're out here going towards Abilene on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. The guy chased me into the woods. Please hurry. I tried, possibly there'll be no, talking to them. I accidentally ran into them. Something indecipherable got the first guy. No, I need the cops. That's what I hear in this call.
Yeah, that's pretty close. That's pretty close to what I heard. I mean, I listened to this seemingly hours on end, and I don't think I can get much better than that.
And if you have followed this case, if you've listened to other podcasts about this case, there are people, they hear all sorts of stuff in this call. They hear gunshots, they hear other voices, they hear all kinds of things. I don't really hear any of that. I don't hear gunshots, I don't hear any other voices. Honestly, I think a lot of the other things people hear on these calls are pareidolia, I think is the word, or pareidolia, which is how you see like rabbits in the clouds or whatever. I think there's a lot of noise on this because Brandon, he's clearly out of breath. He's stressed out. He sounds terrified to me. He sounds like he's running. And I think the noises he makes creates sounds that people people hear things in that aren't there, if that makes sense.
And Brett, that's interesting that you say he sounds terrified, because while I don't have much to add in terms of what the words are that he speaks, I felt like, I agree with you, I don't hear other noises. I don't really hear water. I don't hear cars. I don't hear gunshots. You know, these are all things that other people have hypothesized they hear in the background. I actually hear someone who's probably walking, because there's kind of the stumbling sound to when your voice is not even. Like if you're sitting down at a table and you're speaking, there's no reverberation or movement to your voice. So it sounds like he's walking. But to me, he actually sounds calmer than if he were in an emergency situation, like some people have hypothesized. It doesn't sound to me like he's running for his life. It doesn't actually sound to me like he is gasping for breath as if he had fallen into a ditch or something like that, if that makes sense. He sounds more calm to me than I would expect based on what people hypothesize is happening during the call.
Yeah, there are people who think he's being shot at during this call. There are people who think he gets shot in the middle of this call. And he certainly doesn't sound like that. You know, I do think there are times in the call, you know, when he says there'll be no talking to them, or I tried talking to them, I accidentally ran into them, please hurry. I mean, when he says that, he sounds more sort of frightened and on edge, but not to the extent of, oh my God, these people are trying to kill me, I'm about to die, someone just shot me. I mean, there's none of that.
For me, he sounds more exasperated than, like, come on, why do I have to explain the situation to you? Can't you see this is, like, I need help, as opposed to, oh my goodness, there's a knife at my neck, I'm about to, you know, unless you do something this second, it's all going to be over. It kind of sounds more like the exasperation, like, this is really serious, why aren't you taking this more seriously? Why are you asking me these questions?
Right, like at the end where she's like, do you need an ambulance? And he sort of laughs. No, I need the cops, right?
Right.
He's like, did you not hear what I just told you? I need the cops. The elephant in the room with this 911 call, it is not a well-done call by the person taking the call. This 911 site was actually ran out of a home for the elderly, is my understanding. So basically, the people who ran the old folks' home at night would double as 911 operators. So this is not really a trained or a well-trained 911 operator. So some of the things, she never asks his name. She never asks where he is. That's, you know, usually the very first thing you want to get. So the fact of the matter is, no one knew that Brandon Lawson had made a 911 call at the time. So the police who were responding had no idea about this call. They did not know he had done this. And that's one of the reasons it took so long to find out about it. And the only reason we did is because LaDessa was smart enough to check that the phone records and see that he had called 911. So that's interesting as well, that he makes this call and he basically just calls out into the night because no help is coming. They wouldn't even know where to send help if they wanted to.
Yeah, and Brett, that I think hits on a very important point. The fact that the 911 dispatch center is essentially the night shift of a nursing home goes to the fact that this is a very small town. It's not even a town. He's in between places, right? I think he's an hour and a half outside of where he lives. And so growing up in Texas, if you know anything about Texas roads, there is a lot of nothing in between towns. There are some big cities, some of the biggest cities in the country are in Texas. But in between those towns, on these country roads, there's essentially nothing. It's usually flat, a lot of thicket, a lot of rattlesnakes, a lot of, you know, armadillo, but there's not a lot of people. And so just imagine, could, you know, a big city like New York City have a dispatch center run out of a nursing home? No, they get way too many calls. They would be overwhelmed with calls. But here in this kind of middle of nowhere, the nursing home staff can double as the dispatch center because they probably get a couple calls. You know, it's not going to be an overwhelming number of calls. And they probably don't even need to be trained because they should be trained, but they don't have the experience of asking simple questions like, who are you? Where are you? because they don't have to do this often. They don't get 911 calls often. They don't get these sorts of situations that they have to deal with, that they're in practice of dealing with.
And if you don't believe Alice, just pull up your Google map and look at 277 between San Angelo and Abilene, and basically go to the middle of that road between those two cities, and zoom in, and you will see that where Brandon Lawson disappeared, there ain't nothing. I mean, it is truly just the middle of nowhere. I mean, scrub brush, plains, desert, far as the eye can see, basically. So it's not surprising that this is the kind of 911 center they have. You know, it's like, you know, if you grew up in a small town, you didn't have a fire department. You had like a volunteer fire department. Maybe your dad was part of it, you know, and they did the best they could. I think it's the same thing here. They're doing the best they can, and they're trying to do what they can. But look, I think what should be obvious to you now, we can talk about this call till the end of time, but the call's not going to tell you what happened here. It will help you if you know the rest of the facts. I think you can take the call and you can put it into context and sort of figure out what Brandon's trying to say and what's going on here. But listening to the call over and over and over and over again, like a lot of podcasts do, and podcasts I really enjoy do, just isn't going to be helpful, I think, for actually reaching some sort of conclusion. What I think would be helpful, and what we're going to spend the rest of our podcast doing, is going through the timeline of what happened that day and what we have learned, particularly from Kyle, who had a lot of information that he's only really recently started to share. And I think when you look at that, you will have an idea of maybe what happened to Brandon.
Right, so let's get started on the timeline. As we mentioned, this all gets started quite late in the night. So at 11:30 p.m., Brandon calls his father to tell him he is driving to his house. Now remember, this is about a 3.5-hour drive, so if he's not leaving until almost midnight, he is planning on driving in the middle of the night. Now, his father, recognizing that this probably is not the best idea, especially after having a heated fight with his girlfriend, and who knows if he's, you know, been taking any substances, his father unsuccessfully tries talking Brandon out of it. Around 11:53 p.m., Brandon leaves his home in San Angelo, so he was in a hurry to get out, and he heads for his father's residence in Crowley, Texas. At about midnight, so just a few minutes after he leaves, Brandon's, and I'm sorry, I called her girlfriend earlier, but Brandon's wife, Ladessa, calls his cell phone and asks him to return home or go to his brother's, because his brother
lived like down the road from them.
Right.
So that would have made a lot of sense.
Yes, absolutely. And she recognizes it's midnight. They've just had a heated fight, but still she's worried about him and tries to talk him out of making this 3.5-hour drive. Brandon refuses. At 12:10 a.m., Brandon's brother Kyle arrives at Brandon's home to check on Ladessa and his children. At 12:34 and 12:36, Ladessa misses two calls from Brandon.
And the reason Ladessa misses these calls is she doesn't have her cell phone charger at home. She left it at work. So what she's doing is she's taking the phone out to her car and charging it in her car. There are people who've thought this was strange before, and I've heard people discuss this case and act like that's unusual. I have done that before when I don't have my cell phone charger. Just put it in the car and let the car charge it. I've totally done that. So I can understand how she would miss those calls.
Wait, do you have to run your car to charge your phone, though, to do that?
It depends on the car. Sometimes you do, but there are cars that you don't have to.
Okay. And I ask that just because she misses quite a few calls over a span of time. So I didn't know if your car had to be on that whole time to charge your phone.
Now, I mean, look, it's possible that she's lying, that she was ignoring his calls because she was pissed off at him, which wouldn't be that surprising. And maybe now she just feels bad about it, and so she's saying that. But, I mean, I've done it before where I've left my phone in my car to charge. Usually if you have one of those chargers, you know, like the newer cars, in the old days, it was a cigarette lighter. You kids probably don't even remember cigarette lighters in cars. There were ashtrays in cars and everything. And you would stick your charger into the cigarette lighter. Now, cars, usually you can charge off the battery even if your car is not on. It just depends on your car. So I'm not exactly sure what kind of car she had, but that is what she has said, is that she left her car or her phone in the car to charge it.
And, you know, to give her the benefit of the doubt, she did already try to call him, try to talk him out of it. He was probably very stubborn, said absolutely not. She expects him to be on the road for the next 3.5 hours. It's the middle of the night. They have kids. The kids need to go to sleep. She probably needs to get some sleep. So might as well charge the phone while you're sleeping so you can use it during the day. I, for one, charge my phone at night so that I can use it all day.
It's pretty clear that the reason Brandon was calling LaDessa is that he has run out of gas. Remember, these two calls are at 12:34 and 12:36. At 12:38, Brandon calls Kyle to tell him that his truck has run out of gas. Now, there is something I want to talk about just real quick about this running out of gas, because Brandon's state of mind, I think, is pretty important to remember as we talk about this case. Brandon has left his house. He's angry. He's angry at his wife. He is doing something incredibly impulsive and stupid. He's going to drive 3.5 hours. If he had driven directly, it's actually going to take him closer to 4 if he goes 277 towards Abilene, which is the way he's going. He knows he's going to run out of gas. He knows he doesn't have enough gas to make it that far, but he doesn't stop to fill up his tank. It's just yet another sort of impulsive thing he's doing that night. And I think that's important to remember.
And Brett, can we note that it's not like he drove for a while and was like, I'll get gas later. He runs out of gas within 40 minutes of leaving. That's really little gas left, right? I mean, I don't know about your car, but most cars, you can, it's not a lot of gas left if you're only able to drive about 40 minutes before you completely run out where you are out of gas. And I've been in that situation stupidly, where I've been in the middle of nowhere in multiple different states, including Texas, where if you're on these rural roads, you can be miles. It can be, you know, 50, 60 miles before you see another gas station. But you usually know based on your tank gauge if you have enough to make it to the next gas station. So if he had driven for a couple hours and run out of gas, I could almost understand it. But 40 minutes?
So according to the handy dandy Google machine, from San Angelo to where he ran out of gas is about 30 miles. That means when he left his home, he had what? 2 gallons of gas in his tank? He's driving a truck, so this is probably a pretty big tank of gas that he's got, maybe up to 20 gallons of gas. So he's like, the needle is on E when he leaves. And rather than stop at one of the gas stations in the neighborhood, he just takes off, heading down this road, as if somehow, by magic, he's going to make it this 4-hour drive with no gas. But he does it anyway.
Brett, you and I have done our fair share of driving in the middle of nowhere to go to witness interviews. And one thing I always do, a lot of these interviews, I have to wake up well before dawn, like at 5 a.m. or earlier, to get on the road, to get to these interviews on time. One thing I always do, no matter how early I have to leave the house, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., I fill up my gas tank because I don't want to be caught in the middle of nowhere with gas. And we're usually driving about this distance to go to our interviews. I don't know about you, but as a single woman in a car, I don't take that chance. And I'm very cognizant when I go on these trips where my gas needle is.
And Alice and I drive to the middle of nowhere. Some of the places we've gone, they come back in my nightmares. But
let's just say
you don't want to run out of gas.
No, you don't. But again, you know, that's the last thing typically on my mind when I'm stumbling into my car at 4:30 in the morning. It's dark out and I can barely remember to, you know, grab my wallet. But I still, at the front of my mind, no matter what, no matter how groggy I am, I'm like, got to get gas. And I get gas before like the first gas station out of my house. So I make sure to get gas and not get caught in the middle of nowhere having to pump gas by myself or run out of gas worse.
Right. Brandon wasn't thinking about those things. He's acting irrationally at this point. He's doing irrational things. And whether that was because of the meth or because he was angry, We can't say, but he certainly is doing irrational things. At this point, he calls his brother Kyle because Ledesma is not answering the phone. He tells him that he's out of gas. He needs him to come meet him and give him some gas so he can drive his truck. At this point, he also says something really strange. He tells Kyle that he is being chased by, quote, Mexicans from the neighborhood. He says that Ledesma specifically has sent these Mexicans after him. Kyle asks him if he's hallucinating because of drugs, and Brandon insists that he is not. Now, this Mexicans from the neighborhood thing is going to come back. We will talk about that some more as we dive into some other things that Kyle has said. But for now, let's just keep going with the timeline. At 12:40, Kyle calls Ledesma to tell her that Brandon ran out of gas. Now, one thing I am not entirely sure about is whether or not Kyle actually talked to Ledesma. You would think he didn't, but sort of the way it's always put in these various stories and timelines I've read, it always makes me think that he did talk to Ledesma, which goes to what we were talking about earlier about what really was the state of Ledesma's phone. In any event, at 12:48, which is only 8 minutes later, Ledesma misses another call from Brandon. At this point, around 12:54, so this is after he's called Kyle, after he's called Ledesma again, he calls 911. And we've heard the 911 call. So that happens at 12:54 a.m. And a lot of people act like that's the end of the story. If you've listened to podcasts on this, there are some podcasts, not the good ones, you know, not like True Crime Garage, Generation Y, but there are some podcasts that this is the mystery, right? He called 911 and then he vanished forever. I mean, we even described it that way in the intro to make it sound spooky and interesting, right? But the fact of the matter is, he does make that call, that mysterious call that you guys heard earlier. And he does seem to drop off the face of the earth at the end of that call, in the middle of the call, right after he says he needs the cops, really at the perfect dramatic moment if you were writing this as a script. But that's not it. At 12:57 a.m., so only 3 minutes later, he calls his neighbor. Now, he apparently does not get his neighbor, but his neighbor at 12:58 immediately tries to call him back and, in fact, calls him three times. At no point when he calls him does Brandon answer.
Right. So at 12:58, right when the neighbor is trying to call Brandon, a passing trucker calls 911 to report Brandon's vehicle partially blocking the highway. Now, imagine this. If you've been on, you know, like say a dark two-lane rural country road, if a car is not totally pulled off on the shoulder, that can be really dangerous because usually you're on autopilot, you're on cruise control, and you have to move out of the way in order to miss the car. So this is a dangerous thing. And like we've already mentioned, the trucker recognizes this. And at 1:10 a.m., Kyle arrives on scene to find Brandon missing. And an officer arrives around the same time. Now, I have to note that timeline real quick. Remember, we said that Brandon drove for about 40 minutes before running out of gas. About 30 minutes after Brandon calls Kyle to tell him he's run out of gas, Kyle arrives. So Kyle got there really fast. He must have gotten right into his car, probably didn't have time to stop at a gas station. Maybe he lives closer to where Brandon broke down, but it's a very short timeline.
There's a thing about Kyle, too, that gets missed sometimes. Kyle was in sort of a weird place because he was getting paid that day, but he didn't actually have any money. So he could not buy gas for Brandon when he called. So he actually drives out to the car, to the truck, without any gas and without any money. I guess he was just going to meet Brandon, maybe pick him up. So I think he did just head straight that way because he didn't even have any money to stop and buy gas at the time.
Right. And, you know, the police officer arrives about 10 minutes after the trucker calls, and that sounds about right. Now, at this time, you can imagine Kyle arrives, and soon after, the officer kind of pulls up as well. I imagine probably some lights are on because out here, there's no street lights. It's really dark. So any officer pulled over puts on their lights just to make sure cars passing by don't hit them. Now, Kyle claims to be on the phone with Brandon at this time, and that Brandon told Kyle that Brandon can see Kyle and the officer, but Brandon is supposedly hiding so that the officer can't see him. At 1:18 a.m., Kyle had actually driven out there with his girlfriend, Audrey, and I believe their young son. And Audrey texts Brandon to tell Brandon that the police are still at his truck, kind of like a heads up, don't come out.
Yeah, and I just want to point out a couple things about this timeline. And like I said, we're going to dive into Kyle and what Kyle said in a second. But at 1:10 a.m., when Kyle arrives and when the police officer arrives, and Kyle is apparently on the phone with Brandon, and Brandon, they have some conversations, this is a full 16 minutes after that 911 call. So just going back to what some people think they hear, that there are gunshots and there are, you know, all sorts of other crazy things going on, and that Brandon shot and maybe he's fallen into the river. 16 minutes later, he's on the phone with his brother and he can see the police, right? A couple other things to note about this. He's on the phone at 12:54 making this 911 call. Call lasts about a minute. The trucker passes his truck at 12:58. That's only 4 minutes later, only 3 minutes after the phone call ended. The trucker sees Brandon's truck. He doesn't see anything else. So he doesn't see some other car parked next to Brandon's truck. He doesn't see, you know, any Mexicans running around with guns shooting at somebody who's hiding in the woods. Like, he doesn't see any of these things, right? And that's only 3 minutes later. So I think you can already start to see that whatever weirdness is going on here, it's probably not exactly what some people have speculated before. So as Alice said, 1:18, Audrey's texting Brandon to let him know the police are still there. Don't come out of hiding because you got this warrant. A minute later, Audrey receives a phone call from Brandon. Now, this call is not great. Can't really hear. It's breaking up. She can't make out most of the call, but what she can hear Brandon say is that he's bleeding, which is not a good sign, and that he's about 10 minutes up the road from where they are. Now, remember, at 1:10, Kyle arrives on the scene. Brandon says he can see Kyle. At 1:19, Brandon is saying he's about 10 minutes up the road. Now, presumably by up the road, he means north, away from his vehicle, towards Abilene. And that's backed up by some pings from his cell phone that seem to show that he is north of where his truck is located. And that's heading towards the Colorado River. So at that time, Audrey and Kyle, they drive back south towards San Angelo, basically to sort of get out of sight where the officer is. They kind of hang around, wait 45 minutes for Brandon, thinking that once the police officer leaves, he will emerge, but he never does. Ledessa, at this point, misses multiple more calls from Brandon. About 2 a.m., Kyle and Audrey arrive home. By 3 a.m., Brandon's phone is either shut off or loses battery power. The next morning, Kyle's check has cleared. He's able to buy some gas, which he does. He then drives back to the truck and he leaves the gas can in the truck bed, expecting or hoping at this point that Brandon will come back. By 8:30 a.m. of that day, Brandon's truck is towed. And really, after that point, there's just not much more to say about this. There are searches. There are efforts to find him. The searches are very incomplete. They are very inconclusive. There's a lot of controversy there. The local sheriff is not friendly with the family. Depending on who you ask, there's a grudge there that's preventing them from being able to search some of the private property where Brandon may or may not be. But at that point, the action, for our purposes, is essentially over.
Brett, when you say the search yields nothing, I mean truly nothing. There is no watch, no piece of clothing, no shoe, no credit card, nothing that really can be linked to Brandon.
No footprints, no blood, nothing. There's no trace of him. There is literally no trace of him. There was his truck, and that's it. Once they tow the truck away, it's as if Brandon just vanished off the face of the earth.
And we've talked about this before, where it's kind of hard not to leave anything behind. And that's partly why I think this story captures a lot of people's minds, because it does seem like he just was there one moment, talking to a lot of people, calling a lot of people, and poof, he was gone.
I mean, look, there's nothing like a disappearance. I've talked about before how I'm obsessed with disappearances. Murders are interesting, but there is nothing like a disappearance, because the notion that in this day and age, someone could just vanish off the face of the earth is so crazy. It's just hard to even fathom. And yet it happens, and it happens more often than I think people want to admit. And it certainly happened in this case. And because you have that 911 call that a lot of people are very interested in, it's drawn a lot of attention to this case. But I will tell you, I think if you want to know the truth about this call, it's not the 911 call that you should focus on. It's the calls between Brandon and his brother. So next time, we're going to dive into those calls. We're going to talk about what Brandon said to his brother and what we think that reveals about how he was feeling, what he was thinking, and maybe what the answer might be to this mystery. If you guys have any thoughts or questions or comments, anything's come to you at this point, shoot us an email, prosecutorspod@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias at prosecutorspod. We're also on Reddit. We're on Instagram. We're on YouTube, and you guys on YouTube have been great. We've been getting so many comments. Alice, I don't know if you ever check out the YouTube page.
Yes, I do. I was shocked by how, like, the amazing interaction and comments, and how incredibly civil it is. You guys really rock.
Yeah, I yelled at somebody a few days ago because they were being a jerk. Wow. But usually it's very civil.
I'm not going to say it wasn't
nice because yeah, usually it is very civil, and it's nice because with the podcast, unless somebody shoots us an email or we see them on Twitter, it's hard to have that kind of conversation. But on YouTube, you know, the show's right there and people are commenting underneath it and offering all their ideas. It's great. So we hope you guys will continue to do that. Well, Alice, I think that's all we've got for today. Do you have anything else you want to add before we say sayonara?
That's it, except come back for the next discussion, because this phone call is just so mind-boggling.
Yes, so mind-boggling. Thank you guys for joining us. We will see you next time. But until then, I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Prosecutors. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, have you ever taken an improv class where you, like, just feed off each other? Well, you could teach one.
Maybe you and I should start a stand-up comedy routine. Have you thought about that? Huh?
I'm pretty sure no one
We could
would
do
count.
Improv together. Oh, what? It'd be hilarious. We call it The Prosecutors.
The Prosecutors. No, that would not work.
The Prosecomics.
Yeah, we better stop there.